Well, I wanted to talk to you today about a subject that we don't get to talk about too often, and that has to do with some American history. But I wanted to begin with the most recent Gallup poll on May 2nd, 2022, had these astonishing trends to note. 81% of people believe in God, but that's down from 87% in 2017. I suspect that number is kind of high, but nevertheless, that's what was reported. And it is a new low in Gallup's trends. And then 4 in 10 believe that God can intervene on people's behalf. 4 in 10 believe that God can intervene on people's behalf. And as you might expect, younger liberal Americans are the least likely to believe in God. I was struck with the reminder of Luke 18:8 when I read this, that when Christ returns, will he find faith? Luke 18:8 says, I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find faith on the earth? And we certainly wonder about it. The United States is known as one of the most God-fearing, God-believing nations on the earth, and yet we are far from where we should be in relationship to God. And James 2, verse 19, makes it clear, too, that just to believe that there's a God is not really that much in your favor. He writes in chapter 2, verse 19 of James, you believe that there's one God, you do well. Even the demons believe and tremble. So you're in company with demons if you just believe and you don't think anything more about God. It's probably the last 3 or 4 generations of Americans have not been taught things that God has done for America. They've been educated purposely ignorant of God's role in American history. And as we see today, this world and its leaders, both spirit and human leaders, have done an excellent job in deceiving the people of God's involvement in American history. For example, there are 5 lies that they would have you believe that I want to address today. The first one is, they would have you believe that the founding fathers were just a group of rich white slave owners consumed with the idea of expanding their fortunes. Secondly, they would have you believe that the founding fathers were not believers in God, but atheists and deists. A deist, if you're not familiar with the term, is one who believes that, well, there may have been a God that got things started, but he left and went away and doesn't have anything to do with us now. And so they spread the lie that the founding fathers were not believers in God, but had secular intentions in the revolution. 3, they would have you believe that the Bible is just a good book without authority, and providing no basis for the principles in which our founding documents are rooted. The 4th lie they would have you believe is that their interpretation of the phrase separation of church and state is in our founding doctrines and is anti-church. The 5th lie that they would have you believe is the primary reason why the colonies went to war against Britain in the American Revolution. Who can tell me what was the main reason that we're told and we're taught that we went to war to have independence? Anybody remember?
Taxation
without representation. That is the lie that is propounded, and so I'll address each of those as we have move forward here. In summary, they would have you believe that the founding fathers were non-religious, that the Revolutionary War was a totally secular revolt, and that they established a secular country with no basis nor roots to believe in God or the Bible. This message today, its stories and true facts, don't come directly from the Bible, but they are about God and the Bible and the founding fathers of this country. I want to share with you some of the truth of these, how these men sought God's guidance every way in what they were doing, and how 175 years later, another relatively small group of men removed God from the general education curricula of our true American history and imposed a false economic view of American history. I have to give much acknowledgement to Wall Builders Organization and historian David Barton for the research and documentation that that they have done from this, and I glean from it and I share it with you, and would highly recommend their website and their literature relative to God, our godly American heritage. Why is history so important? Well, history, first of all, is generally a chronological record of significant events, such as those affecting a nation or an institution, and often include an explanation of their causes. The Bible is a book of history. It tells us about the lives of the fathers, as we heard about in the first message. Not just Abraham and his descendants, but others as well that had contact with Israel during those years. But it is those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Proverbs 29:18 of Proverbs says, "Where there is no vision, the people perish." Well, the opposite is also true. If people have a false vision, they fail. President Woodrow Wilson said, "A nation that does not remember what it was yesterday does not know what it is today, nor what it's trying to do." We're trying to do a futile thing if we don't know that we came where we came from and what we have been about. So knowing where we're going as we move ahead is important to understand how we got there. And the elimination of God in our history is a tragedy to the country itself, as we will see here a little later. So let's take a look at those five lies that the enemies of truth would have you believe and the truth behind them. First, the founding fathers. Were they just a group of greedy, rich white men? Well, there were a number of them were wealthy plantation owners, and some were slave owners. They were traders and businessmen, and it's a good thing that they were wealthy because they had to finance the war against the British. But this is not to discount the role other classes of people played in this war. Farmers, merchants, educators, and ordinary common folk. And did you realize that 25% of Washington's military forces were black? 25% were black. And they didn't serve in segregated companies as they did later on in the Civil War and so forth, but these were in fully integrated units. The 56 signers of the Declaration pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor to the new country. And most of them paid with all of those things that they pledged, their lives, their fortunes. Well, they didn't pay with their sacred honor, but their lives and their fortunes, many spent. 39 gentlemen actually signed the Constitution. And 56 signed the Declaration of Independence, actually on August the 2nd. It'll be next week, Tuesday. So we got a little extension from July the 4th. They weren't all present at the time, so by the time they got together, the 56 of them signed it on August 2nd. And 39 men, I said, signed the Constitution. Six signed both Constitution and the Independence. I wanted to mention, good, I'm glad I looked back there. There's a point that those who want to paint the Founding Fathers as slave owners and corrupt individuals and so forth cite the what's called the three-fifths rule. And it is part of the Constitution, and it has to do with apportionment. And that apportionment means how many people are, how many representatives you get because of the population. For every 30,000 people, you got one representative to the House of Representatives. And so the South wanted to claim all of their slaves as whole people, whole votes in the counting of the population. The North said, no, you don't even recognize them as human beings and people, they're property. If you're going to count your property, we'll count our property and count our houses and our chickens and our barns. And the idea of everybody being counted equally in that sense would have given slavery a big step up above the anti-slavery people in the country. So it was an argument against slavery that allowed this compromise of the three-fifths rule. For your black slaves, you could count them as three-fifths of a person. For purposes of apportionment only. That was all that that was about, was apportionment. And it was to serve the blacks at that time as much as was possible. There were attempts to outlaw slavery, ban slavery, many times in some of the states, the colonies that later became states, and in the group itself. But as we know, actually there was a vote to ban slavery in the United States early on that lost by one vote. One vote kept slavery in the legal in the United States at that time. So. Anyway, I think we can just do away with the false idea that they were slave owners and didn't care about their slaves. There were actually laws that in some states like Virginia that didn't allow you to release your slaves and free them. And Washington and Jefferson and others tried to find ways to release their slaves, but it didn't come until later. Second, the Founding Fathers and religion. Were they all atheists and deists and non-religious? Well, the enemies of truth would have you believe that people like Jefferson and Franklin, people that stand out and had a number of letters written and published and so forth, that they could take out of context and try and paint them as racist and deists and non-religious and so forth. So what I did was pick out a couple of quotes from Jefferson and Franklin that shows that that they certainly did believe in God. Jefferson, first quote, "And can the liberties of a nation be thought secure when we have removed their only firm basis, a conviction in the minds of the people that these liberties are the gift of God? They are not to be violated, but with his wrath." Next quote from Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson. "If the freedom of religion can prevail, the genuine doctrines of Jesus will be restored to their original purity." They had in mind changing the church as it was known and practiced in its established way. They saw the abuses that were in the church And they did what they could to balance that out a little bit. Franklin, it says in this first quote from Benjamin Franklin, "He is my creed. I believe in one God, creator of the universe, that he governs it by his providence, that he ought to be worshiped." Second quote from Benjamin Franklin, "The longer I live, the more convinced I become that God governs in the affairs of men. And we have have we now forgotten that powerful friend? Or do we imagine we are all no longer in need of his assistance?" It reminds me of Daniel, the fourth chapter, 32nd verse. There's actually three verses there in that grouping that say pretty much the same thing. But Daniel 4, verse 32, and this is when King Nebuchadnezzar was being sent to his 7 years of living in the wild as a wild animal. "And they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen, and seven times shall pass over you," that meaning 7 years, "until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses." Their doubts and their complaints about religion laid primarily in the abuses perpetrated by the organized churches. This was one reason that they argued for no establishment of a state-approved church. They didn't want to give that kind of power to the organized churches. Late in life, even John Adams wrote that he was sorry for some of his official rulings, which were so strongly pro-religious. Just a handful, really, out of the 250 founding fathers were all put into this same category as they did with Jefferson and Franklin and taking other quotes. And you can find other quotes where they questioned some thoughts about God and about religion in particular. But they did not, they were not atheists and they were not deists, most of them. As a matter of fact, out of the 250 founding fathers, there were 30 ordained ministers, and the rest were God-fearing Christians of one stripe or another. I use the term founding father here, and that is intended to be the way David Barton uses it and through his literature, is those are people who had something significant to contribute to the war effort, the Revolutionary War, and the writing of the Constitution, as well as, of course, the Declaration of Independence. And there were certainly many others, but there were about 250 that fit into that particular category. As a matter of fact, I'll give you one illustration. At the Constitutional Convention, they'd been debating for several days on tough issues that were coming up there, and they had finally just gotten to a place they were not making any progress at all. It was total, just dead in the water. And so they called for prayer. Somebody said, "We didn't start this out, or we started this out asking for God to guide us in the prayer, and we've stumbled and not done that. And so let's pray." And so they took one of the ordained ministers, and he prayed for 3.5 hours. It turned into more than just a prayer, obviously, but a Bible study of how they had come to where they were and the acknowledgement of the power of God as he blessed their efforts. So that is... You give me 3.5 hours of prayer and Bible study, I'll probably go along with you too. it brought their hearts to the point where they could deal with it and understand it. The third lie that they told, and I want you to believe, is that the principles of the Bible are not a good foundation for the Constitution. And yet, the Declaration of Independence itself proclaims, first of all, that there is a Creator God, that all men are created equal by Him. Third, that the Creator gave men certain rights. Fourth, that governments are established to protect those rights. Fifth, that it provides a moral law given by God. And sixth, provides a basis for civil law and the consent of the governed. John Adams, there's a quote from him, "The general principles on which the fathers achieved independence were the general principles of Christianity. Now I will avow that I then believed and now believe that those general principles of Christianity are as eternal and immutable as the existence and attributes of God." It is commonly referred to the basic outline and form of belief that we have and in our system of law and so forth is based on Judeo-Christian ethics. That's a term I'm sure that you've heard, Judeo-Christian principles and Judeo-Christian ethics. This means it comes from the Bible of the Jews and the Bible of the Christians. And it was put forth very clearly in the statements about the creation, the Creator's involvement, and the rights and so forth that citizens had. The fourth lie I wanted to address is the church versus state and the so-called wall of separation. It is not found in any of our founding documents. That is a term that came up much later in a personal letter from Thomas Jefferson to the Danbury Baptist Church in 1802. And while he did write that there was, well, I'll quote here in just a moment, but they would have you believe that the context was totally reversed from the original. The original was to prevent government from interfering with religion, not the other way around. Jefferson, I quote, "I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state to protect the church, not to protect the government." And in recent Supreme Court decisions with a 6-3 majority, based on original intent of the founding documents, we've seen an overturning of Roe v. Wade, and something as good and simple as kneeling to pray in public. A high school football coach was brought to court and trial for that, and the Supreme Court ruled that he could do that. One of the most consequential things that an American president can do is to appoint Supreme Court justices. They serve for a lifetime, and while many have been disappointments to their people who have appointed them, we seem to have a court now that is bent towards original intent, and that's a very good thing. And the fifth I asked you about was what was the reason for the war of taxation without representation. This is the biggest hoax perpetrated by the enemies of truth. It is a result of what I'm going to explain to you in a little bit, the changing of the view of history from being what we know really happened to an economic view of history, which takes out everything else. Read G-O-D. Cuts it out. God. But on the Declaration of Independence, there are 27 facts here that are submitted. Let me quote from the Declaration of Independence. When in the cause of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. So they're saying when something like this happens, a revolution, we're departing from the country, we ought to put forth why and tell you the reasons why. And this is what they said. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. I'm going to skip the rest of that particular paragraph to the last line of it, and it says, to prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. And so there are 27 articles listed here, and most of them had to do with government abuse, and especially what the king had done, King George. And taxation without our consent, for imposing taxes on us without consent, didn't even make it into the top five. Not even the top 10. It's 17th. And yet they focused in on that to the exclusion of virtually everything else, to take God out of the picture. The historians I'm speaking about now, and I'm going to give you a little more information about here very shortly. Yes, so 17 out of 27 is where taxation came in to fill it. As the colonies became the states and won the war, they began to grow. And the freedoms that were permitted by the Constitution allowed businesses to take off, and just a wonderful thing to see. American exceptionalism started to begin to show up, and they had exceptional results in different things. And Louis de Tocqueville, a French aristocrat, a diplomat, a political scientist, political philosopher, and historian, came to America in the early 1800s. And in 1835, he published a book titled Democracy in America. And what he came to do was to search out what was working in America, because he was French, and the French had had a revolution about the same time and several that came after that. We had one revolution. They had, I don't remember how many, five or six in that period of time. And so several other European countries did as well. But de Tocqueville came back and attributed America's success to her belief in and trust in God. Now, this is not the book, but I've seen it, and this is about the size of de Tocqueville's book in 1835 about American exceptionalism, and it was college text required for 130-odd years. They still teach it, but this is about the size of the book that's used from de Tocqueville today, an abridged version. And guess what's been abridged? God. Take God out, and this is what's left. What happened to our American history? I guess, everybody awake? Pardon me for that. Yankee Doodle went to town. Oh, I lost that, didn't I? Okay. Anyway, we're close to the end of this anyway. But what happened to American history? As I said, we had the Bible was a major document, or excuse me, textbook in schools through the 1800s. And came to for the first 130 years, our history books reflect what really happened, including stories of God's divine intervention and deliverance at crucial points in our history. Between 1890 and 1950, a majority of leftist textbook writers put forth the idea that the economy was what was really the thing that drove history and moved forwards events of history. Money. They adopted what they called the economic view of history and dismissed what had been basic education in America for over 130 years, including the role God played in raising up of the United States to the status of the greatest single nation in history. Time doesn't permit me to tell you of many acts of divine intervention in military campaigns, but just one summary comment. The founding fathers and the colonists, that may have been backed by a ragtag militia of untrained and undisciplined farmers and traders, but they took on and defeated the world's most experienced and powerful army and navy of its day. And they did not do that without God's help. From this pulpit, I can only encourage you to research for yourselves the true history of America's godly heritage. Don't accept the enemy's lies about our roots. And as you learn to share these truths with others, and you have the opportunity, and pray for America to rediscover its godly heritage. Join me in asking God's blessing on America. God bless America.
God bless America.
Amen.